It's still real to me, damn it!
Everybody, welcome to this week's edition of the So Real Toast Show, episode number 659 for September 29th, 2022. Welcome to this week's edition of SRTU. I'm one half of the show. I am Jeff Peck, joined every single week by co-host, the one only Dr. Trey Franklin. Dr. Trey, what is up, my friend?
We're seven shows away from 666, and like I told you off the air, I got to spend 3 days staring at cinnamon bun booth, which is my own personal hell. So it all makes sense. It all comes together.
Yeah, and it kind of all wraps into it. The last show before October, which is Halloween month, horror season, Dr. Trey being teased by cinnamon buns. It's spooky season, Dr. Trey. It's very, very scary right now out there.
It is. And plus, I live in Alabama, which all I hear about is how horrible the University of Auburn is right now. So I get a cross section of things to work out right now. I got arts and crafts, food, college football, and then we jump on here and talk about pro wrestling.
No concern about the hurricane, right? Like, it's not supposed to touch the Alabama area, Hurricane Ian.
I'm actually more worried about my dad and my daughter because
yes,
it's over Florida. It's going to come back around and come up through South Carolina, and my dad and my daughter are only like 90 minutes north of the South Carolina, North Carolina border. So it's heading more towards Charlotte, according to projections, which is like 2 hours from them. So they should be okay. Ironically enough, though, I thought about this before we started the show. So Sammy Franklin's cousin, who's almost exactly a year younger than him, his name is Ian, and he is a terror, and he likes to terrorize stuff and just wreck stuff everywhere. So, I walked in the house today, dropped Sammy off at grandma's house, and Ian was there. I just started calling him Hurricane.
Yeah, it's apropos, it sounds like, right?
It makes sense to me.
Yeah, so there you go. Hope everybody who is in the United States is doing all right, especially in the southern region here. In the path of Hurricane Ian, obviously striking Florida on Wednesday. Obviously, thoughts and prayers to everybody out there. And hopefully, if you're someone in that area and you're tuning into the podcast, hopefully this takes your mind off some things. Both myself and Dr. Trey have been involved in hurricanes in the history of the show, and somehow we always found a way to continue to do the podcast, and just sending our good thoughts and vibes out there to everybody as we talk wrestling for at least the next hour or so. Dr. Trey, on last week's podcast, you and I sat here and we debated heading into Grand Slam Dynamite. We debated the MJF casino battle or a casino ladder match chip that he has. And is it going to be treated the way that it was when Brian Cage won it a couple years ago, where he had like a title match a couple weeks later, or would it be a Money in the Bank briefcase? Come to find out, as it was mentioned multiple times on last night's edition of AEW Dynamite, it has more of a Money in the Bank feel to it, as they are teasing MJF cashing in on it whenever he so chooses. Before we dig into this a little bit more and look at the intricacies of this and where it can go and who he and when he can cash it in and who he will cash it on. As we all know, new AEW World Champion John Moxley defeating Bryan Danielson. What do you think here? Like, what do you think about this turn that they added the Money in the Bank element to it? Because you and I talked about it on last week's or 2 weeks ago's podcast, and we were very confused as to how it could be used and when it would be used and how they were going to execute this. It's a Money in the Bank feel. Are you down with it?
Yeah. I mean, it adds that element of intrigue and surprise. I mean, it's always going to be kind of like lingering out there. Like, when is this person going to cash in? We've talked about it with Austin Theory. You know, is this, you know, when we had Reigns and Lesnar at SummerSlam, was this at the right time? And then we saw it again at Clash of the Castle. And some of the more entertaining moments are the cash-ins that don't happen. You know, Tyson Fury getting to punch Theory in the face, and then Brock, you know, hitting an F5 on him at SummerSlam. So there's some, you know, interest into it. I just don't think that a guy like MJF is going to get treated like Theory, where I think that when MJF comes out to cash in his chip, like, we know that's the time. Like, we're not going to get these, like, false cash-ins. But I do like the auspice of it hanging over and creating some intrigue. And, hey, is tonight the night? You know, is it going to be the next pay-per-view? Is it going to be, you know, the next time they're back in New York in the Long Island area? Like, when are they going to pull the trigger on this? And by the way, for everybody out there, you're welcome, because I'm pretty sure AEW listened to our show and said, oh, we probably should clarify this, because if Jeff and Dr. Trey don't know, that means the rest of the world doesn't know either how this whole casino chip works on this thing.
Yeah, it was very, very confusing. And when we went through our run on who would win Grand Slam, the championship 2 weeks ago, you know, I thrown out MJF cashing it in on Danielson or Moxley at the end, or even beforehand taking out Danielson, then taking on John Moxley and Dr. Trey sitting there. I don't think that's how this works. Like, the last time we saw this, Brian Cage had like a match 3 weeks later for the title. It was the way he debuted at All Out. It must have been 2020. I don't remember what they did in 2021 in Chicago and who won that one off the top of my head. But it appears to me going the Money in the Bank route is the best way to execute this, especially for a heel like MJF. And it also tells me, Dr. Trey, that it's a foregone conclusion at this point that MJF will be the AEW World Champion at some point. I mean, they're not giving him this chip to lose it, Dr. Trey. All signs are pointing to me that he is our next World Champion in AEW.
I mean, I don't think they would Baron Corbin or
Damian Sandow.
Yeah, I don't think they'd Sandow it or Corbin it up. And the biggest difference is those guys just weren't on the level of what MJF is in the eyes of the fans of AEW. Like, Corbin and Sandow at that point were entertaining. They were good villains, but they weren't, you know, you never felt like they were going to take that next step and become like main event villains. Like, Corbin maybe, but definitely wasn't Sandow. You know, MJF, you just feel like this guy is ready to explode and just take over the world. And if you muck this up, you could muck up maybe, you know, your biggest quote-unquote homegrown in the company. So, yeah, I'm with you. I just kind of feel like this whole thing is just set to let you know that MJF is going to cash in. The weird thing is, though, is that, you know, we did the Casino Battle Royal, and then we did the Golden Ticket Battle Royal. So now, like, everybody's in a Battle Royal for a shot at Jon Moxley. I've never seen a show do so many Battle Royals.
Yeah, there's Eliminator matches and number one contenders. The ranking system, which was a big thing for AEW when they first launched. We haven't even talked about this story yet. It appears it's just slowly fading away, that they won't be doing the ranking system anymore. They'll still keep track of wins and losses, but it won't matter in who the number one contender is, because FTR has been like the number one contender for the tag team titles for the last 5 months, and they haven't gotten a single title shot, which has been obviously something that fans are pointing out a lot, and FTR themselves are pointing out loud. Pointing out a lot, to the point that Dr. Trey just mentioned there, the Golden Ticket Battle Royal, which is fantastic. They had a battle in chocolate and battle Oompa Loompas to win this match. It'll be on October 18th in Cincinnati. Jon Moxley will defend against Hangman Adam Page, who won that Golden Ticket Battle Royal in Moxley's hometown of Cincinnati. MJF is teasing a cash-in. That's where this all came about. Excalibur mentioned it like 18 times during the broadcast, and then MJF, did the promo saying that he may cash in after the match is over. So that's the next title match. MJF is teasing it as such. I would agree with you, Dr. Trey, that we would see him do this, MJF cashing in like a Long Island, New York area. Newark, New Jersey is the home of Full Gear in about less than 2 months or 2 months from now. That could be it in the Metro North area. They love him. We saw the reaction in Queens at Grand Slam. I mean, what do we think here? Is he cashing it in on Hangman Adam Page or Jon Moxley on October 18th? Does he save it for Full Gear, whatever that world title match is, and then do it afterwards? Like, you know, what's to me, by the end of the year, MJF is our world champion.
Yeah, I mean, I think you roll into 2023 with MJF on top, which means, like, I lean towards more towards Full Gear because it is. I mean, Newark is not really New York. I mean, it's basically Philadelphia. I mean, you know the area.
Yep.
and that to me is much more of a heel kind of audience anyway. You think of all the great ECW shows in Philadelphia, and you know, even you know, One Night Stand with Rob Van Dam and John Cena. I mean, that building in Newark, if
Hammerstein's that, in that was in Manhattan.
Oh, it was in the, yeah, because that's at the Manhattan Center. That's right. My bad. But I mean, just saying, like, that crowd is much more of a heel friendly crowd. And if you're going to pull the trigger, you want to get a big pop out of it and kind of set the stage up for 2023. Plus, you got MJF tied up with this Wheeler Yuta stuff right now as well. So this kind of feels like it's just filler waiting to get to Full Gear. It's just going to be a question of who's he cashing in on and, you know, is there another rivalry between now and then for whoever the AEW World Champion is that he can capitalize on? Is it going to be a straight cash in, or is it going to be, you know, is he going to, you know, pull the old, I'm actually going to call my shot and actually have a match? To me, it is the cash in type thing, but, you know, Moxley or Hangman against Kenny Omega and MJF cashes in on that. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm taking a look right now. I don't see any shows coming up in Long Island anytime soon on their upcoming events. Newark seems to be the most ideal location. You know, go ahead.
Did you ever think that you would say Newark seems like an ideal location?
I guess for a cash in, right? I mean, I don't think they should do it on live TV. I don't think they should do it on a Dynamite. They certainly wouldn't do it on a Rampage. That would be very shocking. To me, the pay-per-view makes most sense for the title change.
Yeah, I mean, really, like all the cash-ins that we've had in WWE that makes it successful outside of maybe Dolph Ziggler is the only one I can think of really that cashed in. I mean, the Big E cash-in was great on Raw, but I mean...
But they did that for ratings against the NFL. I mean, AEW's not having that problem.
We're in a different era also where, you know, WWE's on a subscription basis with their pay-per-views where AEW's trying to generate buys. And if you can tease the cash in for Full Gear, you're going to get more buys on the pay-per-view. So they still have to have that old school, you know, pre-WWE network mentality when it comes to booking their shows and creating fan anticipation for big events.
Plus, Dr. Trey, right, the cash-in portion of this makes better sense for the MJF character than him announcing, like, I'm cashing this in at Full Gear. It's going to be you versus me, Moxley.
Yeah, because, I mean, really, like, and they have to kind of use the model that WWE has. When a babyface cashes in, they either have to call their shot or they have to almost make it like they let the guy know ahead of time for it to really work. If a babyface, I think Punk cashed in after a Jeff Hardy match, and it just kind of killed the momentum coming out of it because it was a babyface catching in on a babyface. And you're just like, wait, should I be mad about this? Like, how's this play out? It was just confusing. When the heel cashes in, you know, it's like, oh my God, this guy's just taking all the shortcuts. And so he still gets to keep his heat, but then you still get the excitement of a new champion. So that's that to me, that's the best bet because, and that's also the MJF character is kind of slimy and underhanded. So use every shortcut available. And if you get a, you know, if you get a Moxley Hangman rematch at Full Gear and it goes 60 minutes, then MJF catches in, that's kind of a great setup for it.
Dr. Troy, would you say MJF is one of our favorites lately on the show over the last like 3 to 5 years?
Yeah. You and I typically like, you know, guys who portray really jerky kind of characters and do it really well. So, you know, you think of the people that we've loved on this show. I mean, Kevin Owens, you know, Ring of Honor run, he was kind of like that just jerk guy that everybody hated. And we're sitting there like, yeah, we love that guy. And Miz, you know, during the SmackDown Live days or the, you know, with the stuff with, you know, Daniel Bryan, like that was stuff we loved. So we love those guys that can just get under people's feathers. And the fact that this guy lives in kayfabe and keeps the character 24/7 pretty much is just such a refreshing thing in this day and age. To me, he's the modern day Rowdy Roddy Piper.
There's a great report out there. This comes to us from Wrestling Inc. and Fightful into the lengths that MJF was taking recently from his recent AEW absence and return. According to the latest from Fightful, statements Friedman has made about never having leaving his house during his 3 months away are almost entirely true. Following his infamous promo in Los Angeles where he called Tony Khan an effing mark and begged to be fired, Friedman stayed in town to attend some meetings for Hollywood-related projects. He was also seen at Disney World over the summer and worked with Impractical Jokers to create some crossover content with AEW. The Salt of the Earth reportedly refrained from contacting most people in his life, including close friends, that he didn't reach out to until shortly before his return at All Out. Furthermore, MJF avoided social media and going out in public during his time away, showing just how committed he was to keeping the mystery alive. The report also notes that several AEW roster members became aware that MJF would return as the Joker in the casino ladder match as All Out was approaching. It remains unclear whether Friedman was legitimately granted a new contract, a lucrative extension, or some sort of amendment to his deal, but sources close to the situation claim he's, quote, a much more favorable situation financially, end quote. Whether it's legitimate or not, MJF continues telling people that he hasn't signed an extension and he still expects a bidding war between AEW and WWE for his contract in 2024. Dr. Dre, I mean, we always respect when people take the lengths like MJF took for his character. You hear this story and it makes you a little nostalgic because you don't see that nowadays in wrestling where someone's going to take their character to the nth degree, live that character as their everyday life, which MJF already does, and he took it to a greater length, basically going into seclusion for the last 3 months. I love the story. I loved hearing it. Hats off to MJF, who's one of the best characters in wrestling today. Your thoughts on the lengths that MJF took over his 3 month time away from AEW?
So I'm gonna go first with the money situation, because I got something else that I don't know if everybody knows about, but the money stuff, I'm sure he got a bonus. I mean, you remember when AEW first started, they were like, okay, everybody's getting paid the same, everybody's on basically a salary, and then all the WWE guys are coming in, and the contracts got inflated. So I'm sure there was a bonus or something to kind of ease, you know, some of those pains that were going on in the locker room with guys like JF. The social media stuff, the basically staying inside, that stuff is fantastic. I mean, it's so old. I met MJF about 6 years ago at IWM at South, and we were actually Facebook friends for a very long time. And then just recently, I noticed that he has a brand new Facebook page. Like, he started a whole, he basically got down his old Facebook page and took himself completely off social media. And then I'm popping up on people you should know. There's Maxwell Jacob Friedman right there with, like, you know, 150 mutual friends of mine. I'm like, wow, he literally took himself completely off the platform just to live the gimmick even more, which I indubitably respect. So you're right. Nobody does that because everybody's afraid of, if I go off social media, people will forget about me and they won't buy my merchandise. And MJF is one of those old school mentalities of, like, look, if I'm a great villain, my company can take care of me financially some way, somehow, to make up for the lack of revenue being generated from merchandise sales. And a lot of guys, that's one reason there's no great heels on the independent scene, because guys are trying to make that merchandise money. And if you're a jerk all the time, people aren't going to buy your stuff. So he just kind of trusts in Tony Khan and AEW to make it right. Like, hey, if I pull myself off social media and I'm not out there promoting shows and promoting events to live the gimmick and live the character and keep this, you know, secretive, I expect you to take care of me. And I'm pretty sure they did.
We typically have seen, and there are videos out there where MJF kind of breaks character a little bit. I think there's some recent interviews where he's, quote, more normal than the character is. But what was MJF like back when you met him 6 years ago? Was he living the gimmick or was he not living the gimmick?
No, he was living the gimmick back then. Like, he was like in the locker room, he's one guy, you know, but then when he was out, when you come through the curtain, he was the gimmick all the time. And in the locker rooms, he was always, you know, I don't want to say he was always super nice and friendly, but if you were in his circle, he was good to you. And if you were outside, he was a little standoffish because, you know, wrestling is a business where you really don't trust anybody because you think everybody's out for your spot. But the couple times I got to meet him, he was always kind of cool with me. We had a couple of good conversations back in the day. Those are the days of John Wayne Murdoch, Reed Bentley, that you see now in GCW, Trey Miguel. You know, those guys are all floating. Legend Larry D, there, Dave and Jake Chris were floating around the IWA Mid-South locker room. So those were good times. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you meet somebody and you're like, damn, like, this guy's got it. And he was, I think, 21, 20 years old at the time. Like, we couldn't even take him out for a beer, I think, because he was underage. So he was just that kind of guy that you just go, yeah, if he gets the right push and the right momentum behind him, he's going to take off. And that's kind of where we're at now.
Switching gears to somebody who has, at times in his illustrious, legendary career, has live the gimmick where he doesn't want merchandise. He treats people like crap. Outside of the television box that we watch professional wrestling on is one Chris Jericho, the current Ring of Honor world champion. They leaned in a little bit more, Dr. Trey, with where the direction is as Chris Jericho is our new ROH world champion, calling it Ring of Jericho. He's not doing the honor code before matches and being dishonorable, defeating Bandito by pulling down his mask and giving the Judas effect or kicking the nuts and giving the Judas effect to Bobby Cruz, who's a beloved ring announcer, longtime ring announcer for ROH. He says he's going to change the vision and the views and the way that it's perceived and looked at, and get rid of like everything that was ROH. And this is the first time we've really seen under the banner of Tony Khan for almost like a full year now. It's like 8 to 10 months that he's owned it, where ROH is getting a pretty decent play on AEW television, where there's a direction, there's a storyline, and there's a purpose. Is Chris Jericho the right guy to head up the reboot of Ring of Honor? Because that appears to me the direction it's taking. It looks like they're taking a page out of the original AEW playbook when they launched 3 years ago and gave the world title and the ball to Chris Jericho to bring them up. And now they're doing it again with this new version of ROH. Is this the right guy to do it?
Yeah, I mean, to get eyes on the product, I mean, you go back 3 years ago, so we were talking about, like, was Jericho the right guy for AEW? It's like, yeah, he's got a fantastic rock band that is pretty well known throughout the world. We used to see him doing TV appearances everywhere, and he was all over the TV, so it made a lot of sense. And, you know, he really hasn't lost any star power since then. In fact, you know, you think of the Judas Effect song, the Judas song was number one on the rock charts just a couple of years ago. So the guy's actually got even more popular since AEW launched. He's got his own podcast that's listened to by hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people every single week. So he's the right guy because he can promote this across all his platforms and get eyes on the product. And then when they make that switch to whoever is going to be the flag bearer and the face of Ring of Honor, it makes a ton of sense. So, it's the right, plus it gives it a storyline. It gives it some legs to run with. I'm in favor of him. If actually, if you remember, like, a couple weeks when he won the title, that's one of the things I said was, hey, he's a sports entertainer. This is a wrestling company. It makes a lot of sense for him to disparage the name of Ring of Honor to kind of create some intrigue into it. So, once again, wrestling world, you're welcome. AEW still listens to us.
Dr. Trey, what do you think of the direction of this ROH so far under Tony Khan's reign? Kerry Sulkin had some interesting comments. I believe it was on Busted Open where, I think it was either before, it was maybe after Grand Slam, where he kind of put into question the direction that AEW has taken ROH so far, because they've really done nothing other than promote like another company's titles on their programming. Like, there's been no spinoff show yet. There's been a couple of events, I think two so far. What do you think of this current direction of ROH? Is it, are you happy with what they're doing? Does it make sense? Should we just continue to be patient? Because, you know, we're coming up on that year mark, and I feel like we are, you know, running out of patience a little bit.
Well, I mean, up until a week ago, I wouldn't say it was horrible, because it reminded me of WWE back in like 92, 93, when they were promoting Smoky Mountain Wrestling on their show, and they had like the Rock and Roll Express on there, and the new Heavenly Bodies were, you know, wrestling, and Barry Windham was wrestling as like the Smoky Mountain champion, and they were trying to do some crossover stuff to help Jim Cornette out, and it was like, yeah, but where do these guys rank in the hierarchy of WWE? And that's the question I've been having with all of this since the Ring of Honor stuff started going on, where, hey, we have a Ring of Honor world champion, we have a Ring of Honor TV champion, six-man champion, tag team champions, but where do these titles rank in AEW? Like, if Samoa Joe comes out to cut a promo while holding the TV title, is that higher on the ranking scale than what the TNT championship is? So there really hasn't been a direction for Ring of Honor other than to kind of keep the name out there and alive until they came up with a plan. It just, it feels like now there actually is kind of a plan in place. We just don't know the full tilt of it yet, but you know, you're seeing with Jericho, doing not following the code of conduct or the code of honor, and you know, the stuff with him and Daniel Garcia going back and forth, and how, you know, a guy like Daniel Garcia could be a fine startup champion for a Ring of Honor company if they treat it like a developmental system, kind of like how NXT was for, you know, the Black and Gold was for WWE for a long time. So, like I said, up until about 24 hours ago, I hated the direction because it had no direction. At least now it feels like they've got something in place for Ring of Honor. It's going to be, how does it unfold going forward?
Yeah, it seemed like they want to get the title off of Gresham, and that's how they went with the direction of Claudio. Went with that for a little bit. It looked like it was going to be Claudio and Wheeler Yuta feuding with FTR. That nothing ever came of that. That's how they closed out their most recent show, I believe, in July. The name of the show escapes me at the moment. Jericho obviously having the world title and beginning the buildup of this Ring of Jericho is going to lead to some bigger things. And obviously, whenever you give the ball to Chris Jericho, it's great. We do have Danielson and Daniel Garcia, who's still part of JAS, the ROH Pure Champion, teaming up to take on Chris Jericho, ROH World Champion, and Sammy Guevara of the JAS on next week's show, or this week's edition of AEW Dynamite. It'll be interesting where this storyline and feud takes us. And then Jericho challenged Bryan Danielson to the October 12th edition of AEW Dynamite in Toronto, Canada, for the ROH World Championship. I always felt like the direction was going to be Jericho versus Danielson. They're doing it pretty early here. They're doing it on Dynamite. They're not doing it on an ROH show, a final battle or whatever that could be coming up here down the line. But it seems like right now, coming out of Grand Slam, that the direction of ROH is at its highest that it's been under the AEW umbrella right now. But that's not really saying much either, Dr. Troy.
No, and I saw some people on social media talking about, like, you know, Jericho and like, how dare Jericho kick out of Bandito's finisher, and, you know, like, oh, I can't believe they're going the route of this guy, when there's so, like, there's a lot of former Ring of Honor world champions, TV champions in that company. So, I love it. To me, I'm like, let Jericho run through a lot of these guys and build up that hatred and that despisement of Jericho holding the title until you figure out who you want to be the face of the brand, when you can separate the two brands and they're not intertwined. So if this is the route they go with, I'm all about it, because I think it makes a ton of sense to actually get the Ring of Honor name back out there when it finally becomes its own separate entity.
Keeping into the realm of AEW, earlier this week, there was a lot of reports of a potential, quote, exodus of AEW stars heading back to WWE. Some names that were being thrown out there: Malakai Black, Buddy Matthews, Andrade, Miro possibly heading back to WWE. Some of those considered to be, quote, Triple H guys who were released, over the last 2 years, looking to make a return in WWE for a better opportunity. Malakai Black came out on his Instagram Live and said that he is still with AEW. And then there was a story earlier this week as well that AEW has a rule that they don't release anyone unless it's under special circumstances, like they did Jimmy Havoc about almost 2 years ago, I want to say now. Dr. Troy, what are your thoughts here? Because I think Malakai Black saying that he's still with AEW and will be returning soon was a huge snuff out to this story. But do you think the rumored names of Malakai Black, Buddy Matthews, Andrade, and Miro, for example, have a piece of them that feels like maybe they would be better utilized under Triple H's reign in WWE?
I mean, a couple of those guys, maybe, like Malakai Black, Andrade, because, you know, those were NXT, former NXT world champions. And when they were the champ, Triple H was in charge of the show. So those guys make sense. Not to mention Andrade's wife is still in WWE. Malakai's wife is still in WWE. Miro, I think Miro stays in AEW because, for one, his wife doesn't work for WWE. And I don't think he feels they did his wife very well after he left. I don't think he feels they did him very well while he was there. So, and he's got more opportunities to do other things in AEW that he's into, with like his video gaming channel and some other stuff. So I think there's some, look, everybody always thinks the grass is greener somewhere else. And even if you've been to the other side of the fence at one point, you might think, well, heck, they got a new gardener now. Maybe that grass is better. So there's always that kind of wanting to explore opportunities that are out there for you. Unless you're just one of those guys that's like always is just like super content, super happy. I love where I am. I'm never going to leave. I don't see why those guys would want to jump, because you know, unless you can get a deal where, hey, I can go and my wife's there and I can be happy and content and travel with them. Right now, you're probably best off where you're at because, hey, the other roster's pretty loaded too. So that's the only issue we're running into is we have a lot of, you know, quote unquote top name talents floating around. There's just not enough airtime for everybody on either show, really.
Well, you know, I always feel like one thing that when there's smoke, there's fire. And I don't think this story comes out of thin air. That I think there's going to be some validity to it, whether all these guys end up remaining in AEW and don't jump ship or whatever. There was a lot of tie-ins. You know, a couple weeks back, we talked about WWE potential contract tampering and reaching out to some AEW stars. I believe it was Fightful confirmed that the star in question who, you know, referred to WWE to their lawyer and then told upper management was one Malakai Black, who at the time didn't want to leave. And then they said that he started thinking about leaving and was all in on returning to WWE. And it was, seemed like it was a foregone conclusion that he would be popping up and whenever his conditional release terms were over with, to then him coming out on Instagram Live and saying everything that's been said is incorrect. And then he is still with AEW. I think there are the way that a lot of wrestling journalists are nowadays, I feel like they are a lot better than they were 15 years ago, that these stories come out and that there is validity to them. I think from what you see, whether it's poking fun or seriousness, I think Andrade and Miro at times have a right to complain about how they're being utilized on television. I don't think Miro especially, and even Andrade to that same point, are being utilized well in AEW. I thought Malakai Black was being utilized well in AEW for a period of time, but then he fell off a little bit. There's just so many few spots to make people like megastars that if you don't get into those spots, especially in an AEW, at a period of time, it was, you know, not many big fish in a small pond, and now there's a lot of big fish in a bigger pond. If you're not making that run at it, then I don't think you ever will. I don't know. I tend to feel like, Dr. Trey, as I'm thinking about it out loud, I do feel like most of these guys would have a better run in a Triple H-led WWE than they would in AEW right now. Like Malakai Black was NXT champion. Andrade was NXT champion. Miro was not really a Triple H guy, but did feud with John Cena at WrestleMania. And Buddy Matthews was pushed as a Cruiserweight champ under Triple H. Like Malakai Black and Andrade could be in main event level feuds if they were with WWE. So I don't think this is a BS story. I do think there's some validity to it. And it'll be interesting to see where things move with you know, the way that AEW is being perceived behind the scenes versus this Triple H-led WWE that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I agree with you. Like, for me, when, you know, the business I'm in, like, I don't know if people know this, but I'm in the gutter business. I help, you know, get people set up with different gutter companies. The company I was working for was great to me, but it got to a point where I felt like I was capped out on my potential, so I started looking around and found a better opportunity. And wrestling's no different. If you feel like you've hit the quote-unquote glass ceiling, you're going to kind of look around and see if there's anything else out there. Even if you're under contract, you can still explore those opportunities and kind of like, you know, there are ways of getting stuff out there without it being tampering. You know, college football coaches do it all the time. You know, what other schools are looking for head coaches? Like, my representation might reach out because then it's not tampering. And I feel like guys like Malakai and Andrade, who kind of maybe feel like they've hit a ceiling, excuse me, in AEW, you know, might send some feelers out to WWE saying, hey, you know, Triple H is really good to me. We had a lot of success. Is there a spot for me? But like you said, there's only so many spots out there. And sometimes you just have to kind of figure out, like, am I a main event guy? Is my gimmick, is my character, is my work rate, are all those things in line with being a main event guy if given the right opportunity? And is my opportunity here or is it somewhere else? And those kind of guys, I think, will always have those upper mid-card kind of guys. And we've seen that throughout the history of wrestling. Guys like, you know, Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect, used to jump back and forth from promotion to promotion. Rick Rude, you know, some Lex Lugers. Those guys just always jump back and forth because they're really solid upper mid-card, lower main event guys. But they never really got the chance to be the guy. And I think guys like Andrade and Malakai and Miro to an extent are those kind of guys where they're upper mid-card, lower main event guys where they're just looking for a chance to be the guy and see if they can run with the ball and become a draw. And I think they're always going to kind of, is the grass greener over there or is it better here? And just always have those feelers out there trying to take the best opportunity they can to maximize their value.
Trey, what do you think is the best opportunity for a wrestler right now? Is it Triple H led WWE or is it Tony Khan led AEW in your eyes?
For me, it'd be Triple H WWE just because there's more opportunity because they have 6 hours of programming where AEW has three. So if you have 6 hours of programming to kind of get out there and get in people's, you know, get in people's viewpoint, that's double the amount of opportunities available. Now, an hour of that is tied up with, you know, NXT, Fallout, NXT 2.0, back to NXT, whatever they're doing there. And you got a lot of, you know, it's NXT 2.0, NXT New Black and Gold's kind of weird because it's all over the place a little bit. But, you know, you got still got 5 hours of Raw and SmackDown to maximize your value where AEW has 3 hours of Dynamite and Rampage. So you still have twice the opportunity in WWE than you would in AEW just about getting TV time at least.
Dr. Trey, last story I wanted to bring up here, and it's a Triple H recreation, something that he's brought to the WWE brand that originally wasn't part of the company until his vision of NXT brought it to the forefront. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. The War Games match coming to Survivor Series, and as I was watching Raw and as I was watching SmackDown this week, I was really thinking to myself, like, okay, we're probably going to start seeing some tea leaves here for the direction of the War Games match. And we shared some viewpoints. The women's side of thing, I think, is very easy to decide here right now. I think it's going to be Damage Control taking on whoever they're feuding with at the time, and maybe they add an additional fourth member to the team, or maybe they add somebody that's like this lone wolf that's a heel to their team for War Games. Would you say that's the direction of the women's match right now?
Yeah, and I think we got a little bit of another glimpse of it when you had the interesting thing is going to be the Alexa Bliss character, because I can see it being Bianca, Asuka, Candice, and then either Alexa Bliss or Raquel Gonzalez on that, you know, and then whoever isn't on that team ends up siding with Damage Control in that one. And then that's kind of my projection, at least for the women's match.
So the men's match, I think, is really intriguing and difficult to decide, because as I was watching SmackDown this past week, I was like, okay, I'm thinking to myself with that opening segment, which was really good, where they gave the t-shirt to Sami Zayn. I'm like, okay, I think it's the bloodline in the War Games match, whether it's, and we talked about this recently as well, whether it's Roman, Jimmy and Jay and Solo taking on a Kevin Owens led team with, let's say Sami Zayn finally turns babyface and says, I'm not going to take this anymore. And they, you know, they kick him out of the bloodline and he becomes this uber popular babyface. Is one direction, or, you know, they don't have Roman in the match at all. Maybe he defends the title at Survivor Series, and you do the Usos and Solo Sikoa and Sami Zayn versing, you know, a Kevin Owens-led team. And then I'm watching Monday's Raw, and I'm thinking to myself, like, man, this stable has been really, really good lately. Like, they have rose to prominence under Triple H-led WWE product lately, specifically on the Raw brand, and that is the Judgment Day. And you're seeing it play out a little bit, right? I'm thinking, okay, the Judgment Day here, Damian Priest, Finn Balor, Dominic Mysterio. I don't think Rhea's in the match. I think it's obviously just all men. They added a fourth person. And then I'm like, okay, who would they be taking on? Edge, Rey Mysterio, Riddle, and maybe AJ Styles? I could see that happening. You know, there's a lot of different names being thrown out there that could be on their way back to WWE. One being Jonah on the independent scene, the former North American champion. Christ, what was his name in NXT? It's escaping me right now.
No, it starts with a B.
Bronson Reed.
Yes, I was almost said Brodus Clay.
Yes, Bronson Reed. Like, maybe they bring him into the fold. So the men's match has me really thinking, because you're going to see the seeds being planted now for it. It could go Bloodline. It could go Judgment Day. I think I'm leaning towards Judgment Day right now, Dr. Trey, to be in that War Games match. What say you currently?
Yeah, I was leaning Bloodline because, I mean, Sammy, Solo, the Usos against somebody. Sammy's the one who loses the match. They kick Sammy out. Sammy comes out for vengeance, becomes uber popular. That makes sense. But I could also see, say, it's Ray, I mean, excuse me, Finn, Damian Priest, Dominic, and then Seth against Riddle, AJ, Edge, and Ray, Edge, AJ, and Riddle. Yeah. So that'd be my 4-on-4 if I did it that way. So, because we saw a little bit, like, Dominic came out during that Seth and Ray match, and Seth's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And all of a sudden, Seth's like, hey, he's not hitting me? Cool. I like you, kid. You know, and so I'm like, okay, well, that shows that Seth can kind of get along with them. And then if you did AJ, Ray, Edge, and Riddle, it makes a lot of sense. So there's a couple different ways to go with it, but I'm with you. Like, it's funny. I see people kind of crapping on the Judgment Day, and I'm like, look, all it takes is for one other person to kind of jump in there and, you know, either be the megastar or help elevate Finn to megastar status, and then that group is off to the races, because then they'd have all the bases covered. You'd be able to have a world champion, a mid-card champion, tag champs, and a women's champ, and they could really run everything. So it could be that dominant heel faction. And don't forget, it was right after The Fiend was released, we had that report come out that they had talked about doing a stable with The Fiend, Malakai Black, and Finn Balor. It wouldn't shock me if The Fiend came back and somehow was aligned with Judgment Day either.
That would be interesting. I haven't thought about that thought. Him, you know, pending his return here very soon, the White Rabbit, we are all thinking, maybe Extreme Rules with the promotional posters and what have you. But first off, in your response, there's people crapping on the Judgment Day. I think they've been the best thing on WWE television right now. That, besides Sami Zayn and the Bloodline, I think the Judgment Day has been the best thing in WWE currently.
I can't argue that. To me, it's been the Bloodline, Sami Zayn, and the Judgment Day stuff, because, for one, like, you and I grew up in an era of factions. Like, I mean, you go back, I mean, literally, there's times in WWE when they did Gang, you know, they did a pay-per-view that was called, was it Gang Rules?
Yeah, that was a Survivor Series, wasn't it?
It was all factions, and that's the era Triple H grew up on WCW, which was an era of factions. So I think we're kind of getting that point where it's something that you and I used to gripe about AEW with, which was, damn, there's so many factions, you lose track. But it makes sense, because in real life, you're going to have friends and you're going to have enemies. And I used to always hate when the babyface would get beat up by four guys and nobody runs out to save him. I'm like, does nobody backstage like this guy? Is that why nobody's coming out to save him from this ass kicking? So it makes sense if you have alignments. So, but there are, I mean, there's literally, and this is more on the actual fan pages where I see people going, oh, I'm so tired of the Bloodline winning all the time. It's like, yeah, that's the point. Did you never see the Horsemen? That's kind of what Flair, Tully, Arn, and whoever their fourth guy did, was they won all the time. So when the babyface actually won the title, it was like, oh my God, this is fantastic. This is the greatest moment in television history, to steal from Tony Schiavone. And I see the same thing with the Judgment Day, which I'm still not a fan of the name.
No.
But, like, they're on top. They're beating people up. And then the good guy gets a little bit of a comeuppance, and then the three guys beat him down. This was what DX did. This is what the Nation of Domination did. Every great faction that was a heel group would beat up the babyface. The babyface gets the upper hand, and then you start to cycle all over again. So this is what the NWO did. Like, I don't get people crapping on factions. Like, if social media...
it's the best.
And so if social media is around in 98, when the NWO was big, like, how many fans would be like, oh, I hate the NWO. They win all the time. They can, you know, the good guys never win. It's like, yeah, that's the point of television, is good guys have to overcome obstacles. Jeez, just drives me nuts. This is why I'm glad I don't associate with many people that are just like, if you're in the wrestling business, I'll talk to you. But if you're a fan, I try to ignore you for the most part, because they come up with the most, like, ridiculous things.
Well, let's fantasy book it here real quick here, Doctor, because we're talking about one or the other. Is there a world we could see the Bloodline taking on the Judgment Day in this War Games match?
I don't know. I don't see it, because
I think people would eat it up, right? Like, when the days of the Shield and the Wyatt family.
To a degree, but at that point, even the Shield and the Wyatt family, at that point, the Shield had gone babyface. And right now, unless one of these groups turns babyface between now and Survivor Series, I just don't see it. Because Triple H, you know, grew up under that, hey, we need good guys against bad guys, because it makes it easier for fans to choose a side.
Can I throw this out there, though? I mean, some of the biggest babyface reactions lately is like Roman as he's feuding with Logan Paul, and Sami Zayn in general right now. People are eating him up.
First of all, anybody feud with Logan Paul is going to get a babyface pop.
They tried. They've been trying to make him babyface, though.
It's kind of like when Roman won the Rumble in Philadelphia. Like, we're trying to make him a good guy, and you people won't let us. Sammy's past what Mizdow was, what Damian Mizdow was. Remember how Mizdow started off as just that flunky, and you're just like, how can you associate yourself with the Miz? And then over the course of time, people just went, this guy's pretty incredible. Like, this is what he's doing is pretty impressive. And then you just start to love and respect what the guy's doing. I think that's Sammy's in that range right now, and people, like, he's past in a lot of ways. Cause like you said, that whole segment on Friday night with the t-shirt stuff was fantastic. I got choked. I didn't legitimately get choked up, but there was that ball in my throat for a moment where I was like, I love this. I absolutely love this. And then seeing Jay in the background, like, you know, screw this guy. like the intrigue and everything else, like, was beautiful. And then the hug with Roman, where Roman's just like standing there while Sammy's hugging him, and then Roman gave him the one arm. I was like, this is fantastic television. And it made a lot of sense, especially when they finally kick Sammy out. It's going to be even more urgent and make people love Sammy even more. And Sammy could come out of this going into 2023 or after the Royal Rumble as one of the biggest baby faces in the company if it's booked right.
It could be Sammy Mania, like a Kofi Mania. Did you notice in that segment, real quick before we close up shop on this week's edition of the pod, did you notice in that segment when the hug part happened, that Solo Sikoa, Jimmy Uso, and even Jey Uso were like holding back laughing and smiling?
Yeah, because that was totally improv.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's like, because I was just watching it, like, even Jey in the background trying to, like, low key, like, mean mug the shot is
and he's laughing.
His lips were trembling, trying to hold back the laughter, even though his eyes were saying, you know, his eyes are saying one thing, but his mouth is, like, literally trying to bust, you know, keep from busting up. And Solo and Jimmy just look like the happiest people in the world because
it
makes Roman feel awkward. So I think they love that as well.
If you haven't seen it yet, Dr. Train, this goes for all of our listeners as well. The Broken Skull session, Stone Cold Steve Austin and Sami Zayn, is a very good one. I highly recommend it. I watched it. I don't know if you did, Dr. Trey. Highly recommend that episode.
I'm actually going to watch it. It's on my queue to watch when I go into this event because I have like an hour and a half to kill before I start selling gutters.
That's perfect because that's how long it takes. All right, with that said, so Dr. Trey could get to that Broken Skull session. Let's get a couple plugs and spots out of the way. You can download the show every Thursday at realguyradio.com. Russell Chatnet on Twitter and the Still Realtho Show iTunes feed. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to help us climb the charts on iTunes. You can follow us individually on Twitter for myself at SRTU Jeff and for Dr. Trey Franklin at the Dr. Trey. And of course, don't forget to follow the show on Twitter at SRTU Podcast. With that being said, what is going on in the wonderful world of Dr. Trey Franklin this week?
Well, like Jeff said, you can follow me on Twitter at the Dr. Trey. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram, Dr. Trey Franklin. When you're on Facebook, check out Rocket City Championship Wrestling. They're running some really big shows here in the state of Alabama. Also, go check out your local indie shows so you can find your next MJF. And damn it, Jeff, you know what? I never got to be on Real Guy Radio. We should bring Real Guy Radio back for at least one episode.
Wow. Just okay.
Me, and if we can find Bauer or Cause or somebody else to jump in and just, that way we can do a show that isn't about wrestling, but still will probably somehow incorporate wrestling.
Yeah, of course. That's how it always goes back to. So support all those great things. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/StillRealTheShow. And we'll be back next week to get you ready for WWE Extreme Rules, which will be next Saturday, Dr. Trey, from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So we'll be previewing and predicting that show. And then, of course, everything that comes out of Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, NXT, everything in the world of professional wrestling in general. We will recap it all here on next week's edition of SRTU. And that will be on October the 6th. So go out there, download the pod, spread the word, tell everybody to download this podcast. And thank you again for your support. Thank you for downloading us. And until next week, for Dr. Trey Franklin, I'm Jeff Pack. This is the Still Realtho Show. Thank you.
Thank you.